Hello, welcome to a podcast for The Lancet. I'm Gavin Cleaver. Every year, we run an essay competition at The Lancet, the Wackley Prize, named after our founder, Thomas Wackley, whose love for a good essay ran deep. We're delighted to announce that this year's winner is Dr. Preethi Ramchand. Her deeply moving story of loss and life touched everyone here at The Lancet, and Preethi has graciously agreed to read her winning essay for us.
The Gift. Dear Mrs. C, I know there is little chance that this will reach you, but at the time of your son's death, I did not have the words. I have them now, however, and feel the need to put pen to paper. As a physician at a level one trauma center, I have always thought it prudent to maintain the attitude that nothing is shocking, nothing is surprising. So, callous as it sounds, 28-year-old gunshot victim becomes just another patient, or perhaps more accurately, just another set of vital signs, laboratory values, and telemetry alarms to worry about in the middle of the night. Grieving families become part of the environment, because if they become more, it becomes impossible to do this job. But as I learned that night from your son, some things should be shocking, should be moving, and should remind us of the humanity that once inspired us to pursue medicine in the first place. I walked into my shift that night like I had every other day that week. No admissions today, so hopefully it'll be a quiet night. The only thing I have to sign out to you is Mr. C. The family wants to withdraw, and he is a candidate for organ donation, so you have to go with him to the operating room to declare him. This was my sign out for my co-fellow. I have to admit, I was relieved that this was your decision. Your son would finally be at peace without the burden of innumerable needles, tubes, and aggressive hourly examinations. It was the right choice. The night started quietly, punctuated only by brief interruptions to review logistics by the organ donation representative assigned to facilitate the night's events. At 2200 hours, I received a call from your son's nurse. The OR is ready. Ready to bring him down? It is an entirely odd feeling to take a patient to the OR for organ procurement. I felt like an executioner bringing a prisoner to the guillotine. And even though it was not without recognition that someone potentially a few floors away was literally going to receive the gift of life from your son, I could not help but feel unsettled. The view from his room that night was stunning. Thanks to the glacial pace of the construction outside his window, the unobscured city skyline looked like a framed photograph. And for a brief minute, I desperately wanted to wake your son up and see the view one last time. A few minutes later, we were ready to go. A strange caravan that included myself, the nurse, the organ donation representative, and your son, bundled up with a telemetry box next to him, almost mockingly monitoring continuous vitals on someone about to die. And so we traveled to the OR. To be honest, it felt no different from any of the other times I have accompanied a patient to a diagnostic study. Everyone seemed to be in good spirits. Someone mentioned an upcoming football game. Another colleague commented on a new restaurant that she was eager to try. The telemetry box continued to chirp brightly with his heartbeat. When we arrived in the OR holding area, a team of four attending surgeons greeted us. Each was there with his or her entourage of fellows and residents, ready to take life-giving organs from your son. Once in the OR, they prepped your son as they would any other patient. Sterilizing ChloraPrep and iodine swabs were liberally applied on his abdomen and chest. Sky blue sterile drapes soon covered him, with the exception of his face, which remained the only part that was exposed, the sole indication of the person beneath. A timeout was performed with the surgical and anesthesia teams, and then, for the first time, there was a palpable change in the room. The organ donation representative read an obligatory statement of our collective acknowledgement of your son's gift. I wanted to be moved, I wanted to feel overwhelmed, but it felt forced and awkward. I stared at my feet. Minutes later, the representative explained to me that your son would soon be terminally extubated. After this, you would be allowed to come inside the OR to remain with him as he passed. And in an effort to preserve the dignity of this process, all efforts would be made to cover anything related to the surgery. Those same sterile drapes would cover the long tables holding the vast repertoire of surgical instruments. They would cover all the monitors. They would cover the space where the anesthetist would sit during the surgery. And most importantly, every single member of the operating team, Physicians, nurses, scrub techs would leave the room. Only four people would remain: myself, the nurse, you, and your son. 5 minutes later, gowns covered the OR from wall to wall. I asked the nurse to give your son lorazepam and fentanyl, wanting to avoid even the most remote possibility of suffering. Your son was then liberated from the ventilator, followed by a rapid exodus of the nearly 15 other people who were previously in the room. And for a brief minute, we were in the OR alone. Me, the nurse, and your son. Executioner, assistant, and the sentenced. The lights were dimmed, and as the cliche goes, the silence was deafening. And then you walked in. You were wearing a sterile OR gown. You nodded at me, and I almost looked away, a little embarrassed by how strong you were. You walked to your son and held his hand. You didn't cry. You didn't say anything. You just took out your phone. And then the music started. I don't remember the song, but I remember you holding his hand and singing to him, mother to son. I remember feeling like someone had knocked the wind out of me, scared to breathe too loudly and give away the tears that had bubbled up in me, feeling embarrassed that you demonstrated such resilience while I was barely able to maintain my composure. After 21 long minutes, his telemetry monitor showed a flat line of his once present heartbeat. I walked closer, but you were not aware of me. I knew I had to tell you that I needed to listen to his heart and declare death, but I couldn't bring myself to ruin the moment. So I gave you a few more seconds. I knew those seconds were precious for organ preservation, but to whom was I responsible at that moment? Your son? You? The patient receiving his organs? I had no idea. I just didn't have it in me to push past you. A few seconds later, you saw me and understood. I put my stethoscope on his chest and listened. And there it was, the familiar silence of death. I'm so sorry. The time of death is 2 a.m. You were given a couple more minutes to kiss him goodbye, and then you were escorted out. And then once again, the room was transformed, as quickly and abruptly as it had been before. Within seconds, bright lights flooded the room. The drapes were torn down, exposing the space as the OR that it was, and the surgical team, previously hidden behind a door, came streaming in, like a symphony about to start. And then the real race began. Within minutes, the first incision was made, and viscera came pouring out. A flurry of hands deftly cut, pulled, and removed organs and tissues. I stayed for a few minutes to watch this transformation of care, from the care of your son's life to the care and preservation of his organs for the sake of other unknown lives who now waited anxiously. As an intern on the liver service 4 years earlier, I cared for a patient on the never-ending transplant list. And then his night came. The gastroenterology fellow called me eagerly at 3 a.m. Mr. M has a liver. Make him NPO now and order pre-op lab stat for the OR. He's first case today. Telling Mr. M and his family the news was thrilling. To wake someone in the middle of the night and tell him he is getting another chance at life feels like playing God. I did not give the donor much thought at the time. I knew that someone else had died, but I was too excited for my patient in that moment to acknowledge that loss. Death happens. It is inevitable. Some people die unceremoniously. Others die alone. Still others die traumatically after a long illness or protracted suffering. Your son's passing was none of these. Despite the sterility of the OR and the unfortunate circumstances that brought him to us in the first place, his death was unforgettable. To you, to me, and to those complete strangers who were excitedly woken that night to the news of their second chance.
Thank you, Preethi. And thank you to everyone who contributed in any way to The Lancet's efforts across 2019. We'll be back in 2020 with some exciting updates, especially on the audio front, and I hope you'll join us then. From everyone at The Lancet, we hope you have a wonderful holiday season.